Welcome to GRE Snacks, snackable episodes about the GRE exam and graduate school admissions. I'm Tyler, the founder of Achievable, and we have an affordable GRE course that includes everything you need to ace your GRE exam. A full textbook, videos on key topics, tons of GRE questions backed by our memory-enhancing algorithm, a built-in study planner and essay grader, and full-length practice exams. You can try it out for free by going to achievable.me, and if you like it, use the code PODCAST to get 10% off at checkout. Also, if you have a question or topic that you'd like us to discuss in a future episode, please contact me at tyler@achievable.me with the subject line podcast topic. Now, let's get started. Today, we have Matt Roy, who is the author of Achievable's GRE course, back on the podcast with us, and we're really excited to have you back here, Matt. I'd love if you could just introduce yourself and for the people who haven't heard you before.
All right. Hello, Tyler. It's good to talk to you again. So I've been a GRE tutor since the beginning of COVID. I originally taught for Kaplan, and then I eventually started teaching just on my own on Wyzant. And ultimately, I wrote the GRE course for Achievable.
Yeah. And what a course it is. We're big fans of it. So today we're going to be talking about sort of the big news of the year, right? Which is the new shorter GRE. They basically cut the time in half, right? And they did so essentially by cutting the number of sections in half, and they removed one of the two essays. I guess it's like first broad strokes, right? Like what changed, and then like what are the implications of those changes?
Yeah, absolutely. So it originally was about 4 hours, and now it is literally in half. It's slightly less than 2 hours at this point. And the number of sections has also changed, and the number of questions per section has changed. A couple things that didn't change for sure. And that is the type of questions you're asked, the amount of time it takes per question, and the ratio in which these different types of questions are presented. So essentially, what you study is completely unchanged, okay? But there are a few things that I'll get into that will change or that in your studies should change. But first, let me just walk through what exactly changed. So obviously, there used to be two essays. Each essay was 30 minutes long. Now there's just one, and that essay is just the issue essay now. There used to be the argument essay where you're supposed to poke holes in some argument. But now it's just the issue essay where you just present your opinion, doesn't matter which side you choose, on some polarizing topic. And then after that, we have obviously verbal and quant. There used to be two graded verbal sections and two graded quant sections and one extra one that was ungraded. It was called like their research. Section where they just were their guinea pigs, I guess. I guess they got enough data because they no longer have that section. And they just have two graded ones now for each. Those, however, are even shorter than they used to be. One of them is the first one is 12 questions long, and the second one is 15 questions long. And however, just like before, it still is adaptive. So that's a really important point to make. The 12 question one, which is extremely short, depending upon how well you did on that one, the second one's difficulty is determined by that. So obviously, if you did really well on the first, you're going to get a hard second one. If you did fine, you'll get a medium. If you did poorly on the first one, you'll get a very easy second one. The order in which you will be presented, verbal, quant, or quant, verbal, or whatever, is still random. So that's another important point to make. So how does this really affect our studying? Well, one thing I've noticed from a lot of my students is because it's so quick, there is no time to kind of get in the groove and adjust even. So like because the sections were longer before, you had more flexibility to kind of slow down at a certain point if you try to catch up later. There's none of that now. It's just
Right.
really
And
quick.
you also, because you could skip questions on the GRE, you had the opportunity to kind of skip a few, like go through all the ones you know how to do and then go back. Now it's like, well, I mean, you can still do that and probably should, but it's just everything's so short that it's a little bit riskier.
Yeah, even that, the time it takes to move around, like, to go into the review screen and then go back, that as a percentage of the total time in that section has now
Right.
grown, right? Just these little clicks really matter now. So yeah, that's the first point I want to make is because sections are shorter, it should be less daunting to do practice sections in your studies and time yourself more often in your studies. Because like just 12 questions timed is really not that hard, right? But obviously before it was a lot harder because it was like 30 full minutes of
Right.
sections timed. And in Achievables course we have that. So that's a really good resource. You can even randomize it for the 12 or 15 question type or section type. So yeah, I would suggest doing a lot more timed practice. Of course, not all the time because it you do need to learn as well, not you specifically, but the student. You're not taking
No,
exam,
not anytime soon anyway.
right? No.
No.
For fun, no.
I mean, we are my co-founder and took the exam for fun and did quite well, but he's also been working on this course for a while,
Oh yeah.
so that probably helps a little bit. Yeah, so
Yeah.
let's dig into a couple of those things. So the first thing, the importance of, you talked about not being able to get into a groove and kind of the importance of each question when you only got 12, right? And it's determining your next section, which means that in a way your score is going to be kind of bracketed a little bit, right? Like if you get the really easy section, your score can only go so high. If you get the really hard section, probably your score can only go so low. Obviously all of this is anecdotal and what we don't actually know, but that's kind of the rough idea. And so really, I guess the first question I have is, how do if you're worried about not being able to get into a groove or that you have less time to get into a groove, like how do you prepare for that specifically? Like, is it just taking lots of timed, short practice tests or and is that the main thing? Is there anything else?
It's not just that. Of course, that's really important to have lots of experience and to get a feel. It's also really important just to get a feel if you're spending a lot of time on a question, and you'll only get that feel if you do a lot of practice sections. But another thing is time-saving
Right.
strategies that specifically people should prepare for. Another one in another podcast that will come out later. Is a podcast where I'll be discussing picking numbers, for example. But also, like in a reading comprehension, there's ways to save time. For example, if a question specifically asks for the general like topic, it's probably in the first few sentences. If it follows conventional writing,
Right, and the type of passages that they would choose, right, too.
So yeah, that's the point is not only practicing a bunch so you get that feel for if you're going too fast or too slow, but specifically taking time to strategize for speed, but I should also say not making mistakes is another version of being fast.
Right. Well, because if you
So
make a mistake on 1 out of 25 or 1 out of 30, I mean, it's not great. But if you make a mistake on 1 out of 12, that's obviously a lot worse. It's roughly mistakes are twice as bad if the test is half the length, right?
Yeah, I mean like just within a specific problem, as you're doing the problem and you just like literally like as you're writing in, the algebra operation, you just miswrite it. Well, you got to go back and do everything again because you made a little mistake while you were writing specifically. So, being very careful and just like using the calculator for things that are kind of like routine operations is totally fine. Don't lean on it, but don't choose not to use the calculator just as a way of, or just because you heard someone say you shouldn't use the calculator. If it's going to prevent you from making a silly mistake, then of course use it.
Yeah. And I think also the other thing too is, it sounds like it's really important to be really fluent in diagnosing GRE problem types, right? Because that shortcuts
Yes.
like how quickly you can get to the task of solving them.
Absolutely. Having a plan. So certain question types have certain kind of preset strategies. And so having that plan, or at least having an idea of how to attack certain question types, is going to save you a lot of time.
Yeah, and you can get those, obviously from our course because we're talking about it, but I would hope that most of the courses out there probably have these kind of tips, right? Or tutors. Because at the end of the
Yeah.
day, the GRE is as much a puzzle as it is a standardized test. In fact, maybe sometimes more so, where a lot of the work is
Yeah.
figuring out what you're actually supposed to do.
Yes, absolutely. I can definitely say from experience that every problem that seems difficult is easy once it's explained. And why it's so easy is because you see it like once it's done. And basically the key is finding the path or finding the strategy or finding the logic that gets to the answer, not necessarily just being good at the math in between. It's kind of seeing it from start to end logically that the test more and more is, I believe, is testing now. It's becoming more of a logic or math creativity type test or abstraction.
Right. Yeah, and with fewer questions, arguably, I don't know. I mean, I guess this is just me totally guessing, but I would imagine that the abstractness becomes even more important. But yeah, so my next question for you was about just kind of the mental part of taking a shorter test, right? On the one hand, it is generally probably better that it's shorter for the sake of like test fatigue. Focus and a bunch of other things. But on the other hand, you have to be on your A game right away, right? Like talking about what we were talking about before with sort of you don't have as much time to kind of get warmed up or ramped up. What advice do you have for kind of making sure you're at like optimal mental performance going into even the very first section?
I have a couple things that I tell every student before they take their exam or even before they schedule their exam. And that is to obviously sign up for the exam at a time where you are usually quick, and not like obviously not too early. Like if you're not a morning person, don't make it too early. Also, though, make sure you if you have coffee every day, make sure you have coffee that day, the day you take the exam.
If you don't have coffee every day, maybe you don't take have coffee that
Just don't change anything. Make sure you get enough sleep and basically try to have the same routine that you usually have. I did
day.
not do that, by the way, when I took my exam. I was in the Peace Corps at the time, and I arrived in the capital where I was going to take the exam the next day, and then I went to three different hotels. They were all booked, and then I booked on booking.com, and I arrived, and there was no longer an Airbnb. So it was already getting close to midnight before I even found a place to
Oh
sleep.
boy.
It was very stressful.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so then that I mean that all makes sense.
That's
It's
behind me,
really
though.
kind of the standard preparation tips then, right? Just maybe I mean do you think typically I mean I've heard people go both ways on this advice, but arguably, the old advice was like, give your brain a break, don't do any practice tests like the day of or the day before. Do you still think that's true?
Oh, definitely. I still think that's the case. In fact, I would go farther and say that in the last few days, maybe like 4 days out, you shouldn't be doing new problems. You should be doing the problems you previously got wrong so that you can solidify those things that you learned. It would be really bad if, like, 2 days before the exam, you do a bunch of problems, like hard level problems, and you get like 70, 80% of them wrong, and you just feel really bad about yourself. So it's really important. It's actually like also just logical. If you took all this time to study, you need to review the things you learned in the end, right? That's the best comparative advantage you have at that moment, just getting really good at what you know. But of course, I would say no. The day before, the what I might do is like really simple problems that I've already done before. And then I think you can do flashcards or vocabulary flashcards all the way up until the day before. That's fine. As long as you're not frying your brain and doing like an hour of
Right.
flashcards.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with all of that. I think it's interesting. So, like, going into maybe like the last couple of weeks, let's say, do you think it makes more sense to just do the problems you're getting wrong, do a bunch of problems that you're getting right so that you can practice getting them done faster, right? And kind of getting them out of the way easier, or, a mix of the two?
I would say in the last week, it's important to do the problems you got wrong before, because you've already seen it, so you do know the answer. You can't get to the answer, right? You know how to get to the answer. So it's not like you're actually going to be stuck. If you've studied it, you know how to solve it. But yeah, I think it's totally fine to do like easy level or easy or medium. It really depends on the person, of course. But to do still new problems that you're pretty sure you will be able to attack pretty easily. But this is like literally like the second to last day before the exam. I think in the week before you still can be the week before and earlier you can still be studying as hard as you
Right.
want.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, so then the other thing I wanted to ask you about is that you talked about sort of you've had gotten feedback from other students that you've had like through tutoring, et cetera, as on the new GRE. And I guess my question to you is kind of what is the student feedback and what are they saying? Better, worse, easier, harder, at least more enjoyable, less enjoyable, kind of what did you hear?
First, I just want to specify, probably up to like 3 or 4 days before you can do whatever you want, not a full week before. Meaning you can study as hard as you want, but once you're getting like 3 days out and 2 days out, that's when you should be reviewing. But anyway, I just want to specify. So obviously, everybody's really happy about it just being 2 hours. That's one thing I get. And I think that will contribute to a lot more people taking the GRE in the future. But the main feedback has been the speed. And it's not like the exam is
Yeah,
any
per question,
faster
the time is the same. Yeah.
per question. Yeah. But the sections are faster. So these sections get, kind of solidified and then you can never go back really quickly. You don't have time to bounce around. The question just Or the section just disappears really quickly. And then I would say people who get disheartened early really feel like they're fighting an uphill battle at that point because they feel like those early mistakes are just already affecting them. One thing I would say, and what I say to all my students, is you can't really have any memory when you're doing this, similar to like a sport. You can't remember the last shot you took. Or the last interception you threw, you just got to
Right.
keep going because it doesn't affect you at
Right.
that point. It's hard, obviously, to do that, to tell yourself that, but it's what it has to be. So it would be a good thing to practice, just practicing that mindset as well.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I mean, at least for me, my last question for you today, given the, all the things you just said, the thing that popped into my head was, does this mean that the sort of typical advice that was for the old GRE of like skipping questions, do you think that is a bad idea now?
I have actually shied away from that at this point, especially in the first section that's only 12 questions. Well, the first thing I say to every student is, if you are going to skip, literally don't leave it blank. Do not leave a question blank that you skip. You can put in a guess and then skip it. But if you leave it blank and then you're running out of time in the very end and you're like, oh no, I got to go back to wherever my question was. And you're also wasting time trying to find that and then stressing about that the whole time. That's like really unnecessary. So at least guess if you're going to move on. And that should be your best guess. But as for the two sections that are just 12 questions long, the two initial sections, no, I wouldn't suggest doing that. At a certain point, if you think you're taking too long and you have to move on, you're probably not even going to go see, you're not even going to see it again anyway, because by the time you finish everything, if you're taking a long time there, you're already going to be close to the end. So I would guess, flag it, and then move on. And then if you have time in the end, go back. But you need to take an educated guess at least on those. Don't completely skip and say, I'll think about it later.
Especially if
You
you
know?
invest time into it, right? Like it seems like that with the
Yeah.
12 question one, especially, but just with the new shorter format, the worst thing you can do is spend a minute and a half on a question and be like, I don't really know how to figure this out, and I'll come back to it later. Like you almost have to cut bait at that point.
Yeah, at that point you need to say, I don't think I can figure it out, but I need to make a good guess, and then just make your guess and move on. Of course, you should do that if you know deep down that like you're never going to get to the answer, then just move on. But at least make a guess. And the fact that you can't really figure it out then just means that your comparative advantage is probably in other problems you haven't seen before that you're likely going to know.
Yeah,
Right?
exactly. And I think also kind of the last like the thing that you prompted there too, is just this idea that like if there's a question you're like, I don't think I can get this right. I mean, I think if you're I would almost argue that if you're kind of 15, 30 seconds into it and you really just don't know, like maybe it's a quant question where you're just like, yeah, I there's clearly some law of like systems of equations that I'm forgetting. Or you're looking at a verbal question and you're like, I don't know any of these six words. Like at that point, maybe
Oh,
you
yeah.
just quit early and buy yourself more time for other things.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing I'll say about that is just don't fall into the trap of saying that for every question that just looks slightly annoying. Because some people can do problems, but they look at it and they're like, ah, I'll just skip it. And then you don't want to get into that habit, of course. So you have to kind of be honest with yourself and really tell yourself, can I do this or is this is this too much? Or is it too
Yep.
difficult?
Yeah, don't be personal about it. Just attack the
Yeah.
test, right? Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about today before we wrap up this episode?
Just one quick GRE tip. In quant comparison questions, if you look at it and you genuinely have no idea what to do, it's very likely that D, meaning the relationship between quantity A and quantity B, is you cannot determine it, is the answer that's might be more likely to be correct. Not because D is more likely in all cases, but D is more likely in the case that you don't know the answer. Because that's probably why. Because you don't know what to do might be why D is the answer. So I would just say guess D on quant comparison when you have no idea what to
And
do.
yeah, like maybe your chances are not like super good that you're going to get it right because you're still guessing, but your chances might be like 33% instead of 25, which is what they would normally be.
Yeah.
Because I agree with you. Generally
Yeah.
speaking, like quant comparison can also be the most time consuming because it is you basically have to prove that nothing works, which is almost like you have to anti-solve all three of the other options. So
Yes. Yeah, or you have to prove conflicting scenarios and then say because there are conflicting scenarios, it shows that D is the answer. But again, if you have no idea what to do, it's likely that's why D is the answer. Some of them are like, I call them like fake questions where what they're asking is meaningless. And that's why D is the answer.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. This has been Jiri Snacks, hosted by Tyler from Achievable with Matt Roy. And Achievable has a great online Jiri course that you can try for free at achievable.me. Use the code podcast to get 10% off at checkout.